talk about gender discrimination in the workplace and schools, you know, even in Hollywood. But is there gender discrimination in our world of medicine? It's one of the most important issues, don't you think? Women receive the same kind of medical care as men? Do we think so? Are the research, studies, and trials that develop medicine and treatment, are they inclusive of women so that women get a fair shake when it comes to that? If not, why not? And what do we need to do to fix it? Dr. Marla Mendelson is a cardiologist at the fabulous Northwestern Feinberg School of Medicine and Northwestern Memorial Hospital. She's a board certified in internal medicine and cardiovascular disease, and she is the co-director of the Women's Health Research Institute, which studies gender bias, the very topic we're talking about. Dr. Mendelson, welcome.
Thank you.
You were here last year to the day. You just reminded
yes.
me. Oh my gosh, a whole year has gone by. And so this is how serious is this issue, whether women get the same treatment in hospitals and doctors by doctors and hospitals as men?
This could be catastrophic. It could be life-threatening. We have been looking at this since 1990, when some studies first came out that said that women were being treated different from the men when they came into the emergency room with chest pain. And in cardiology, we've had Go Red, and we've had all sorts of informational campaigns and things like that. And we actually started to see some inroads. But cardiology is not alone. There are huge discrepancies in what we know about sex and gender differences in health and illness.
Is it just male doctors treating women differently, or are female doctors doing the same thing?
I don't know if we can indict male doctors on this. I don't know if it's that issue. I think we have a huge education and knowledge deficit that is feeding into this. We have studies that aren't done on women. They're not done on women. I think medications we use every day do not have to be studied in women to get approved by the FDA.
Let's talk about that in a minute. Let's just talk about going into a hospital. And I've heard these kinds of things, that women, when they complain about pain, are not taken as seriously. Is that, I know we're probably talking in big generalities here, and as a cardiologist, you obviously have different terms for these things. But is that true? Or is it just the symptoms that are being noted are different?
I think the symptoms and the manifestation of disease is different. And just to take a step back to what we're talking about, sex differences are biologic differences. And we see that all the time. They're due to a lot of different reasons. And we'll get into some of that later. And then gender differences is how you interact with society. So,
right, okay.
And perception. And women's symptoms, I know, again, I can speak from cardiology, but I think this is pervasive in many areas of medicine. Women's symptoms are not typical, like, in the textbook. They're not as described in the textbook. They're a little bit different, but they still could be due to somebody having a heart attack.
Could you give an example, like, of what a typical male heart attack, and we probably know this, but how a woman might manifest the same type of problem, but in a very different way?
So on TV, you see somebody having a heart attack. First, they start rubbing their wrist, and then they grab their chest and they fall over. That's usually a man.
Yes.
A woman, it can be more subtle. And women may tend to minimize their symptoms. They may have a higher pain threshold. They may get not crushing chest pain. They may get nausea. They may get pain in their jaw. Which could be still coming from their heart. There could be shortness of breath. There could be a lot of different things. All of those things we look at in men and women as a sign of a heart problem. But in women, those may be a little more common. I'm not convinced of all the research that's been done in it. But women who are at risk for heart disease, a good many of them are diabetics. And diabetics, whether you're a man or a woman, you don't get classic symptoms. So there's always multiple factors that come into play here. But yes, the people in the emergency room, for example, have to be aware of it, because now we're seeing younger women, premenopausal women, coming in with chest pain and having acute cardiac events, having heart attacks, because of a different mechanism that is more common in women. The artery kind of tears and sets up the same problem as with any other heart attack. We're starting to see that, and it really is incumbent upon emergency room providers to recognize this. And even if a woman you're looking at is 35 years old, she still could be having a heart attack.
Are you saying the research bears out that women are having worse outcomes to some extent than they should because of these problems? And it's hard to measure that, yeah. I would imagine, right?
Well, the American Heart Association is very good at compiling statistics every so often. And for a while there, in the new era of intervening in a heart attack immediately and saving heart muscle, the statistics were looking really great in men. The mortality after an acute event was going way down, and in women it was going up. We're starting to see that change. And the change started again with the Go Red campaign, with awareness, with making clinicians more aware, making women more aware. And I think that's what we really have been focusing on, at least we have at Northwestern, for 30 years, 25 years, to get women more aware that this could be happening so they can advocate for themselves.
And is there, kind of skipping around here, but I know I'm thinking back to my mom, and she had some medical issues at the end, which many, many women do, many men too. But she would downplay her symptoms to the doctor, and she would kind of, I'm like, Mom, tell him how bad it was. Tell him how bad that pain was. And, oh, you know, I'm okay. It's all right. And what do you think? You know, and I think women maybe are a little bit more strong-minded these days, but some women are not. And even as a lawyer, I see women downplaying what's going on in their lives, and I have to ask 10 more questions to get it out of them in some cases. I don't know if that's something sociological, that we as women don't like to, you know, bother people with our problems, but is that part of this in some ways? I mean, I'm not blaming women. Believe me, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's how we're wired.
That's how we're getting to the gender bias. And there's gender bias within women themselves, and that's socialization, that I'm not supposed to complain. I'm supposed to take care of everybody else.
Right.
But, you know, we try to get the message out that you can't take care of everybody else if you're not healthy. And we have to sort of change that way of looking at things. One of the interesting things is getting women to exercise. And there are a lot of barriers to exercise, and it's really generational that you see. And so we're starting to improve on that front, where people are valuing exercise for multiple reasons. But in an older generation, it wasn't as common. Again, sweeping generalization, but it wasn't as common. And
are you saying that it's easier to get men of a certain age to exercise than women? Because I always think women are, you know, we like to look good, we like to keep our weight down, I like to wear our little size dresses or whatever, that would be something that would be easier to convince a woman of than a man.
Yeah. You'd be surprised. Also, I have a hard time in convincing people who are thin to exercise. Ah. So they may be thin, but they may not be fit.
Right.
And I think that's an important distinction. And that I see almost always in women. So there's a lot of eating disorder, dietary things and things like that with women. But I think overall in the general population, there at a certain age, there's less exercise, and it's just not being done. It's linked to vanity, again, a gender issue, but it's not pervasive enough to get people exercising.
Very interesting. We're talking to Dr. Marla Mendelson. She is the co-director of Northwestern's Women's Health Research Institute, which studies gender bias. And we're going to be talking to her some more about what you can do to make sure that you're taken care of and that some of these issues of discrimination do not impact your outcome. If you have any questions, give me a call here, 981-7200, or text to that same number, 312-981-7200. This is WGN, and I'm Karen Conti. We're here talking about gender discrimination in the world of medicine, and we're here with Dr. Marla Mendelson from Northwestern, Feinberg School of Medicine, Northwestern Memorial Hospital. Dr. Mendelson, there was a text that had an interesting question. My sister died at age 41 from spontaneous coronary artery dissection. Is that the same thing as a heart attack?
Yes, that can cause a heart attack, and we just spoke about that in the earlier segment. That's the 35-year-old woman who comes in with chest pain and sweating and shortness of breath, and then they go into an EKG. Her EKG is abnormal. They check the blood enzymes, and her enzymes are abnormal, and all the things stack up that this is a heart attack. It is a different mechanism than what we see in those 65-year-old men or women, but it is an event, and it's an important event to recognize. And what happens is we don't completely know why, and it happens in women, and it happens after pregnancy, that there's a tear in the artery wall and it sets up the whole process, just like a heart attack, where the clot forms and stops blood flow.
Interesting. So it can present itself with the same symptoms, but the source is a different kind of issue.
But the end result is the same.
Yes.
So we have to.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about the studies that are done in developing treatment and developing medicine. And I know your position is that women are not included in these studies. And therefore, some of the treatments are not geared toward women's issues when it comes to treatment for these kinds of things. Why is this happening? Why aren't women included in studies?
Well, this is a problem that's been going on for years. And starting from the cellular level and studies in animals, there were not female cells or female animals included in studies.
Why the heck not?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. They can be more expensive. The research is different because women have, or female animals, have pesky hormones, which interfere with your results. And so they're saying it'd be easier to do it. Well, that has translated into clinical medicine. So in clinical medicine, and again, I can speak best to cardiology, but overall, the participation of women in studies where women do get the disease that's being studied is about 26%.
Wow.
Which is terrible. You're talking about diseases like heart failure, where it's 50-50 in the population, and yet only 25% of the study subjects are women. And there's been a lot of reasons. Sometimes if you're studying a drug, you put an age cutoff. And a lot of women with the disease may be beyond the age cutoff, so you don't have that information. They exclude women. They exclude women of childbearing age, whether that's appropriate or not. They're worried about the hormone cycle because things change over the course of a month for a woman. And that can affect the research. It can affect how the drug is metabolized. Or people are afraid that that's the issue.
So when companies do a study to say, you know, they want to cure diabetes, let's say, and let's just say that men and women have different issues when they have this disease, are you saying that should a drug manufacturer, say, have two different studies, one for men and women, or can it be the same study and do you just have equal amounts, you know, how do you propose to remedy this situation?
Well, researchers should have more women in studies. Now, there are other reasons, too. Women are busy and they're, you know, they're
raising children,
taking care of their families and their parents and everybody else. And so they may not participate. So actually at the Women's Health Research Institute, we started over 10 years ago a registry for the women in Illinois, all women over age 18, to register some basic health data anonymously into a database. Then researchers can come to our database and we can query the database for them to find women to participate in their studies. Women can decide to opt out at any point, but this is how we are physically getting more women into studies.
Why don't you give the information out? I assume that women are somewhat compensated for these kinds of studies, or at least some of their expenses.
This one is very simple. It takes maybe 20 minutes. It can be done on your phone. It can be done on your iPad. It can be done on your computer. You go onto the registry and answer some questions. That's it. Now, if a person is chosen to participate in a study, there may be remuneration or parking and help to participate in that study. But our registry does not require any tissue, any blood. We just want the information. And then we would give those names to researchers. They would contact women, and women could say, oh, I've changed my mind. I don't want to participate. That's perfectly fine. But this is a way we can get women into studies. A lot of the women in our registry may actually be controls, so that if you have a woman with diabetes who's 45, you really, to make your study strong, you want to know what happens in a woman who doesn't have diabetes. So that's what the registry is for.
And why don't you give out that information, and then I'm going to go to the phones. We have a caller for you.
That can be, you can get to the registry through our website, which is whr.northwestern, this is all lowercase, .edu.
Okay, what, one more time?
whr.northwestern.edu.
And you can always call me at the office or email me if you have my information, which I'll give out throughout the show. Let's go to Kim in Orland Park. Hi, Kim. Welcome to the show. You're here with Karen Conti and Dr. Marla Mendelson.
Hi. You know, I have a hole in my left ventricle, and I get pretty, like every 3 or 4 years, and they usually do an echocardiogram. And when you're looking at the brain, you can see the I can see where the blood leaks out. Is that something that, and they always say, you don't have to worry about the, but it's always in your mind. Is this something, what does your doctor suggest?
Okay. Thank you.
It's all right, never closed, and it was from birth.
Yes, it's called a ventricular septal defect, right?
Exactly.
Okay. My other hat besides the Women's Health Research Institute is I run our adult congenital heart program at Northwestern. So we see lots of people in your exact same situation. And the ventricular septal defect is unique. You were born with it. And it sometimes, in many people, it remains very uncomplicated through life. But it is important to touch base every so often because sometimes things change. And that's what they, and the best way to do that is with an echocardiogram, or certainly if you have any symptoms, you want to get to medical attention. Although people can live a very long life with this. If it remains uncomplicated, if it's uncomplicated, pregnancy is not an issue. But you need to, people need to know that you have it and that it needs to be checked every so often.
Thank you so much.
Okay, but why not? Wait, I had one more thing.
Sure.
Why wouldn't they just fix it? Why can't you go up through the groin and just plug it?
Well, you could. However, when every time we do a procedure, there's risk associated with it. And it would mean putting an artificial device into your heart, which becomes part of the heart muscle. And in that position, it may cause more problems than it solves, as far as future arrhythmias and things like that. So usually we do not fix these at this day and at this time. There are other types of holes in the heart that we do.
Kim, thank you so much. We're going to have to move on, but thank you for your call.
Fine.
It was very interesting. Thank you.
Yep.
So let's just talk briefly. The gender issue is one thing when it comes to discrimination, but I assume that race and age, and there are other factors of discrimination when it comes to being treated by a hospital or doctor. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And this has been reported on numerous occasions. There are places in Chicago that are doing specific research in that. It is very hard to get research subjects that have diversity that we see in the population. Again, it has access to healthcare. There is sometimes a concern about being a research participant that it may infringe on their rights or it may be harmful. There's a lot of mythology out there about and concern and about research, and that people are not enrolling in research, so we don't have that information. The other thing is access to healthcare, period. And the big example of that is in this country, our maternal mortality numbers are appalling. And a lot of that has to do with underserved women who don't have good access to health care. And that's it's racial, it's ethnic, it's socioeconomic. There's a lot of different problems that come to bear. But it's still, what the bottom line is that women are dying.
Dr. Marla Mendelson, thank you so much for joining us. If someone wants to contact you,
through that website that I mentioned.
Why don't you give it again?
WHR.Northwestern, all lowercase, .edu.
Thank you so much for joining us. Stay tuned. We're going to be taking your legal questions here on WGN. This is the Karen Conti Show.